On our earth, before writing was invented, before the printing press was invented, poetry flourished. That's why we know that poetry is like bread. It should be shared by all, by scholars and by peasants, by all our vast, incredible, extraordinary family of humanity. That was Pablo Neruda. I'm Bob Holman, and this is the Poetry is Bread podcast, where poetry challenges us, makes us think, and with imagination and courage and heart, changes the world. Very happy today to be in Bowery Poetry Studios with Ava H. D. The author of Light Worlds, Photo Haiku Hybrids with Kendall Thomas.
Townend.
Oh, spell that for me.
Like Townend Country.
Okay, Townend. T-O-W-N.
E-N-D.
E-N-D, Townend Country. Beautiful book, and I love that word hybrid. I want to talk about that. Also the author of Rotten Perfect Mouth and the brand new The Natural Hustle. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Here she is. You know, when you Google Ava H. D., the first thing that comes up is...
like a bunch of porn?
H. D.
Oh.
H. D. the poet.
Really? Because it used to be like Eastern European pornos.
Well, I don't have the same search engines that you have, obviously, you know.
Our predilections diverge, I suppose.
HD seems to be a common predilection, though. Hilda Doolittle, wonderful imagist poet, renamed, or so they say, by Ezra Pound to HD, the initials. Great formalism, great feeling for Greek poetry and the kind of sapphic concision in her work. Did that have anything to do with you picking up the initials?
No. No, not at all. I didn't know about her, although she stole my name, so. There is that, but I didn't get my name from being pounded by the pound.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the initials of my surname, and often, but yeah, pretty much always throughout my life, my surname was too long to fit on any form, so people would just write HD.
H period, D period. Herolambides?
Sure.
Doherty, with a hyphen in between. Yeah, that's long.
That is long, but HD, anybody can say.
You can say it, you can look it up.
Even Ezra Pound can say
it. It's also Greek, that Herolambides, I believe, isn't it?
You are correct.
And so another connection with the aforementioned poet.
Was she interested in modern Greece or... the Greece of 3,000 years ago.
She was interested. I mean, you quote Kavafi in your recent book.
I do. Oh, yes, I do. I love him. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So.
Well, and he's in the middle, right?
Okay.
Because he writes in an older style. He sort of has a little sprinkling of... he's not writing in like a really modern idiom, even though he's writing in contemporary Greek.
So what idiom do you think you're writing in, Ava?
Oh, well, I'm just writing in plain modern English, right? Like it's not, you would know if I was using words like, I don't know, wither and half.
Okay. The wither and half is definitely out of your amazing poems. But you do write sonnets.
Hey, you notice. I like to be so sneaky, and then maybe a nice Bob Holman will come along and notice. So that's, I like that. I don't like it if it's advertised, but I do like it if it...
Well, this podcast is not advertised. Not advertisements. It really is just the poems themselves that are sitting around here talking to each other.
But it's sneaky sonnets are nice. You
yeah,
know,
like they definitely are sneaky sonnets, even if one of them is Petrarchan and the other one is Shakespearean. This is what our audience is thrilled to hear about. And I believe it's the... Petrarchan that is about the pizza boys.
Oh, the pizza boys. Aren't they adorable?
Totally. And I was struck by your use in there of the word doughty.
Oh, yeah.
D-O-U-G-H-T-Y. Oh, this is great. You know, the boys are pizza-esque.
Oh, that's, I didn't even think of that.
But he's not.
I'm well, such a loser. That's great. It's a dough-based pun.
Yeah.
And I missed it.
Well, do you think it has anything to do with your last name?
No, I don't.
Okay. That
but
was,
you know what? It could. I mean, what the fuck do I know?
Yes, exactly. I always think the poet is the last to know.
That's right. I'm like an idiot savant without the savant.
No, dear. The savant comes first with you. Sorry about that. And I apologize for using the word dear for all the people who are going to write into me. Just
don't
slipped
worry,
out.
Darling.
Okay, good. We're down to the vocabulary now. Hey, thought we might start with a poem from, it's okay to say your first book? Is that
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Rotten Perfect Mouth, World's Greatest Title, wins the World's Greatest Title prize.
Oh, I won.
Yes. Yep, there you go. A plaque to take
I
home.
I just gave it 110% whole time. I left everything on the floor and I won.
How about this poem, Digression? Would you read it for
Digression.
Us?
Digression, yeah.
Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, this one that I wrote on Bloor Street in the Portuguese Bakery.
So we're talking Montreal there, I guess.
Oh, no, sorry, that's Toronto.
Toronto.
Toronto, yeah. Bloor Street is the east-west artery of the center of Toronto.
I knew that.
Well, I know you did, but I thought you were just drawing me out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's that, too.
You know what's funny? When you were saying about dear before, you know who always calls me dear, and I love it, is my friend Joanna Perlmutter.
Really?
Yeah, and she's done it. Like, her father also uses dear, and it always makes me feel embraced.
Great. I think it's, you know, it's a nice, cozy kind of word if people can allow it.
It is.
You know?
It's, well, and you know
it's
what?
It's a hug of a word.
It's a hug of a word. And she's from a line of bakers. There used to be a bakery in Kensington Market in Toronto called Perlmutter's. And so, you know, everybody likes being embraced by the scent of dough rising.
So what are baking. The specialties of Perlmutter's?
It's closed now.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it is closed now. You can visit it in your time-traveling dreams.
I'm there. Bagels?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so forth.
Bagels and so forth.
Oh. But sorry, speaking of digressions, they're my forte. But this, you want me to read this one, is called Digression. Oh, wow, look, it's so accurate. Okay, I'll read it now. Digression. If I see it, it's on my tongue. If I see a truck, I say trucks, overalls, dogs. I say summertime rural routes and poor fuel economy and carburetor blues and long bluegrass nights and sawdust on a pair of thrice-mended car hearts. And the daylight stacked up on the flatbed contains every spring to date, a big bang's worth of seasons, which could be one long spring day, March or May. And if it were May, it could be that afternoon we slipped from our harbor berths and lay on our backs by the soldier's graveyard, and you sang the light away until our thrice mended work pants were dewy with dusk. If I think about how cold we were that night, I can't see anything but the steam rising from our peeled socks and our bodies and the bathtub. And if I remember the steam clearing, I can't see anything but the diversion, which was you. until you were the main event, after all.
Bravo. Yeah, this is, I think, a great entryway, a portal into your poetry, Ava. If I see it, it's on my tongue, is the opening, and the work of the poet is right there in those words. I'm going to show you a postcard now, and our readership can hear it. Do you want to read this poem of mine for the house here?
It's a white card with a yellow banana on it, on which is written the word banana, underneath which it says Bob Holman, and it says, if you see something, say something.
There it is. You know, it's a poet's job. It's what we do. It's exactly what you say. If I see it, it's on my tongue. You know, as Artaud said, thought is made in the mouth.
Really?
You don't think of it until you speak it out. And when you see a truck, you say it.
That's so funny. I thought it was a personal failing, but you know, if Artaud said
being a poet is definitely that. Yes, we extol the poets here. And you actually get paid, too. Don't tell anybody.
Ooh. You know?
But trucks, overalls, dogs, and by this time we have digressed, right? But truck equals truck, you know, as...
Truck equals truck. That's a good bumper sticker.
Fernando Pessoa, in his heteronym Alberto Cairo, said, of the stone I say, it is a stone.
Bright boy, he is.
And I think you're always doing that, you know, which is to see something, say something, and then let it digress. And that's where the poetry of yours diverges.
Right, like I would say, if I see Keith Richards, it is a stone.
You do see Mick Jagger in your book, and the Rolling Stones appear a few times.
Mick Jagger, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Is it just his his body is in the book?
Like that? Now I'm.
I hope it's like
I'm
his mouth.
Yeah, it's Mick Jagger's mouth. And it is not either rotten or perfect either. It's simply Mick Jagger's mouth.
Right. It's a mouth schooled at the London School of Economics.
Yes, and
a much accredited mouth.
Indeed, and you know, throw off the jams, you know. A lot of music comes into your poetry, not just the Stones in this.
Is that true? That's good.
Yeah.
I like music.
It is a good thing.
Music taught me how to write. Well, if I can, then it's because of lyrics.
So whose lyrics?
I don't know. Everybody's. You know who I really liked always? Or maybe particularly when I was a teenager, is Michael Stipe. I love his lyrics. And then, like, I guess obvious people like Leonard Cohen or Chuck D.
Mm.
You know, like people who just roll along with something to say. But really,
Stipe is a poet. He hangs out at the
sure
Poetry Project. Some, you know.
Does he really?
Yeah, he did a beautiful piece at John Giorno's memorial where. There was John was on the screen, and Michael had written this piece where he talks to John, to the on-screen John, and John's reaction to Michael's lines.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just beautiful.
Yeah, he's great. Or even just what you can get with, like, I don't know. There's so many good. Like Sam Cooke, like someone who's not really, I guess, known because his voice is so beautiful. You know, it kind of... Maybe for some it eclipses what he has to say, but it's so perfect, right?
It is perfect.
Just like these simple turns of, and I guess because songwriters are so, they're economical, you know, they have to be, and they impress me with how quickly they can set the scene and slay you.
Yeah, it's again a trait that I think you have. When you want it, when you want to use it, and then when you want to let loose, like you do with your digressions, they are really, really let loose. You actually quote Leonard Cohen in the book, too.
I do. Oh, yeah, but they wouldn't allow me, because I don't know what it is, his publisher or his estate or whatever wouldn't let me quote him directly. But I picture Leonard Cohen not thinking much of that.
Yeah. I got to spend a day with him when we were shooting the United States of Poetry.
No way.
Oh,
that's
really
great.
Really down to earth. That's well, great. Also, up in the ashram with it.
Yeah.
As well. But I was wondering.
That sounds like such an insult.
No.
Shove it up your ashram.
But you have line three, line four. What are you? What
oh, from your, the old revolution.
Yeah. I mean, you do quote him. I assume that's you quoting him, not you referring to words and lines that you weren't allowed to use.
No, I was referring to words and lines that I wasn't allowed to use.
You can say them now if you want.
That's right, but what were they? They were, I love that line. I can't pretend I feel very much like singing as they carry the bodies away. I like that too because I picture it with all sorts of different punctuation. Like I like song lyrics because they're so ambiguous. Like if it was, I can't pretend, and then a colon. I feel very much like singing as they carry the body. You know what I mean? Like you could fuck around with it.
You are, yeah, that's, you do that. You know, you use your dashes, your colons, and even the occasional semicolon. Lots of commas and periods.
Lots of commas.
And then when you drop them out and allow the ambiguity to grow, that's a particular.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Should I change?
Punctuate is, you use the punctuation. You know, William Carlos Williams said he could never figure out the punctuation. You, to me, have figured out the punctuation in the poetry. Please keep doing
that.
Well,
I like punctuation, but you know, they didn't use it in ancient Greece, so.
Well, they didn't write it down in ancient Greece.
They didn't spoke it.
You know, it was years and years before people realized that there were things such as words. It began just as a flow that comes out of the mouth, your spew, right?
And I still haven't realized it.
Good. You classical classicist, you? Yeah. Let's get another poem in the work. Oh, I got to talk about rhyme before we do that, because this poem, of course, sneaks in a beautiful set of rhymes in the second verse.
Is it by mistake or on purpose?
I'm supposed to ask you that question.
Oh, okay? Shit.
So, do you know what rhymes I'm talking about here?
Oh, this poem?
In this poem, digression.
Yes, you know what? I noticed it when I read it aloud, but I've never read this aloud before. So, I do tend to, I notice all the rhymes if I'm prevailed upon to read things aloud.
May I read the rhymes?
Fucking go for it.
Day, day, may, may, lay, grave.
Wow. Oh, and away. Look, there's
and away.
One. Wow. Well, look at that. I certainly didn't do that on purpose, but I think it's normal, like even, you know, for like little children, rhyme, consonants, all that kind of stuff.
Well,
love is a rhyme, right? You try to get in the rhythm of someone else and match up.
I too think the world might be a love poem.
Oh, no.
Yep, and we're going to spend a lot of this podcast quoting you back to you and
That's
having
so
you
funny.
Look like that.
That's hilarious. Yeah. It's in there.
Yeah.
It's not even my fault.
Yeah, okay. I can, you know, we're learning here, folks. And we're learning to read these poems. Let's pick another poem here for, how about Postcard from Iceland?
Postcard from Iceland.
What do you think?
I like that one.
All right, good, good.
I'm not averse to that one. Should I find it in
the book? It's on page 47.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, Mr.
Prepared.
I work with Ron Devenini here, you know, so I better be on my toes.
That's right. It's all Ron's fault. Yeah, postcard from Iceland. That's exciting. Okay, I'll read it. As you noted, it's called Postcard from Iceland. But it may
sorry
be
I gave away the title there. But right. I'm sorry I interrupted your
wisdom. Oh no, that was an aside.
What was your aside?
It could be a trick. Don't tell anyone. All right, postcard from Iceland. The weather is fine. I cannot see for long distances due to hills, but the distances in my head lengthen. I have been thinking about lava. How much cooled rock does it take to make a leg to stand on? These are the sorts of thoughts I have here on what you people call vacation. I have been thinking of various wives, of my soul, of my breakfast table, of my dreams. I have been trying to arrange them, these ghosts, in an order that suggests no order, that does not insinuate rank. It has been difficult. I don't believe in ranking things, or ghosts, or women, that I, a man or a ghost of one, have once loved, which is to say continue to, as love does not simply stop at nouns such as wife or 40 or yesterday. I have been thinking of the Irish rain moistening the skin on the scalded milk of my mother's voice, this skin made of milk and rain necessary for the dropping tremolo of a lullaby about a woman who dies alone and unmourned with hands that reek of living fish. I have been thinking that my skin pulls strangely over my bones and that this causes me to make simple spelling errors and poor decisions. I have been wondering how deeply into my head my eyes could fall before the bones in my strange, exhausted face would notice, sound the alarm, realign, resurrect. I am no longer confident about the likelihood of remedy. The bones might never notice, I have decided. My dawn-starched eyes could fall through endless space forever, like unhinged escape pods, celestial garbage. The weather constrains, handcuffs, a throat inflamed. My head is filled with damp strips of cotton that curdle and drip like a fouled poultice. The bombs in the heads of others continue to detonate, while mine just seethes and obscures. Dripping. There is the reek of kerosene. I ordered a cup of coffee today, then immediately threw it off a cliff, right into the North Atlantic, without tasting or paying for it. I'm the king of this goddamn island, I screamed, foolishly, as wolffish and pollock felt the pH shift in the water and gnashed their snaggled teeth at me. I made myself a cup of coffee today and stood over the kitchen counter and the cup and the floor barely holding up my feet, which cannot stand my body, from which my head hung as it now hangs by one single jealous thread without which I would be undone. I can barely keep my head up. The air is clean and viscous and carbon, and I suck it back like isinglass. I can barely lift my head for the air. Oh God, my head. I'm not in Iceland. I hate it here.
The crowd is going wild here in the studio, but since Ram Devanini press the mute button. We're not able to hear that over the airwaves. I just loved that poem.
I'm so glad you like it, because it's so weird.
Well, that's maybe why I love it, but I think your poems are basically weird.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like anybody else's poems.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should try harder.
No, try less and see what happens. I thought it was a compliment, duh.
Oh, good.
You know, okay. But, you know, well, I mean, do you think you write, you know, who would you say is in your school? Who writes, you know?
School, I don't know, I got kicked out of school at a young age. But I guess the idea would be to, you know, like blend in.
No, you can talk all you want to about that, but then you write these poems, you know, and just think of the different, what can we call them, but the different modalities that this poem wants to, gets to. First off, it reminds me of Sam Beckett.
You know, really?
Yep, I gotta say.
Oh, that's so funny.
Mr. Beckett, he's continually is going there as he's standing still. And, of course, this poem is also a he, which is one of the first things you notice, at least it seems to me, doing the persona number on this. So there's a couple of modalities, but then, you know, you also got the science fiction modality and your unhinged escape pods, celestial garbage. And right after it, you move into the erotic modality, the weather constrains, handcuffs, a throat inflamed. You know, I mean, you moved immediately from sci-fi to eroticism, and they just, you know, they pop in, they pop out.
Well, I didn't
know
it was either. You know, I'm just writing a postcard, trying to fill in that.
This ain't gonna fit in up on any postcard. Come on,
what a failure! Like one of those like letters by John Keats where he's writing around the corner. You know,
yes, like. That's exactly what it is.
I'm gonna squish it in.
Do you think that the image on the other hand, on the other side, is your inability to see for long distances due to hills? it's a joke. I mean, it's funny,
I'm
right?
I'm glad. Oh, you know? That's so nice. You see that it's a joke. Oh. That's good.
Another modality, though, in the seriousness of this, because the distance, you know.
If you expect me to give you 10 cents every time you say modality,
oh, okay.
You got another thing.
It's gone.
Coming.
Okay. I should give you 10 cents.
You should give me 10 cents. Exactly.
No more the M word.
I need to make money here.
The distances in my head lengthen doesn't seem to be a joke.
No. Yeah. That's a quick turn, I guess.
Yeah. The maestro of the quick turn.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a nice thing to say.
You know what the next line is?
I really don't.
I have been thinking about lava.
That's kind of funny.
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me?
That makes me laugh.
We haven't got out of the first verse yet, folks. And one of the things I wanted to, when you begin these digressions, when you go into these digressions, they come off, and I'm talking here about, I have been thinking of various wives of my soul, of my breakfast table, of my dreams. You know, to go from wives of my soul to breakfast table to dreams, those are three very different places to be.
Yeah, those are different wives. But I think many, many men or other people who might have a wife have at least those three.
Not random.
Not random?
Yeah, there's just, I mean, they seem like they're from three different worlds.
Yeah, but that's why, you know, I mean, isn't that the tension in a relationship, too, that there's one person at the breakfast table, there's another person that you dreamed about, and there's another residing in your ribcage?
Yeah, 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 you got me there. I'd have to agree with that one, yeah. Somehow I think when you get to my head is filled with damp strips of cotton that curdle and drip like a fouled poultice, that you're in, this is really what goes on inside a brain, inside a skull. You know, that's, you know, how we experience our own thoughts is what you're getting at, I think.
Oh, yeah, there. Maybe. Yeah, I think I was probably thinking about, you know, sometimes it's like a expression, like cotton wool in the head, but it's more like the wool is getting a little nasty, you know? It's not wool to knit a nice pair of mittens with.
Precisely. To continue, the bombs in the heads of others continue to detonate. Looking, you're getting to the other people's head. While mine just seethes and obscures.
Yeah, I was thinking of it, like the person writing this postcard is, well, as you said, it's a man, so that he's looking around and being jealous. And convinced that everybody, yeah, the bombs in the heads of the others are, you know, these scintillating fireworks in his own head is just damp, fizzle. You know, it's a dud. I think I didn't use the word dud, but that seems to be.
It goes right along with the bombs. If a bomb doesn't go off,
well,
it's a
yeah,
dud,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
You got the one head that just doesn't do that thing.
Allow it to, yeah, clear to be bombed out, but bombed in or just bombed. And the concluding line of that verse is, there is the reek of kerosene.
Oh, yeah. I guess there is.
Which is just, to me, just hits it out of the park.
Really?
Well, you start there inside your brain, which is these strips of cotton that are dripping like a foul poultice.
And it's like a homemade bomb, I think, too, right? Like when you think of you people, you stuff rags, you dip them in kerosene, you stuff it in a bottle or whatever, and you, like... Not that I would, but you do.
You are listening audience, not me.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, me. But there's the reek of kerosene is like, that to me is, there's drama here. I mean, when I read that, guess what? I smelled it.
Ooh, synesthesia.
You were making it happen.
That's why they call you synesthetic Bob.
I wish I had more synesthesia. Yeah, I
don't. Maybe not. Imagine I'm like, ah, shit. You're like, ooh.
Oh.
You're so sad.
Oh, you know, you do this at times. It's like you're winding up, you're going into the stretch, and then you let go of the pitch, you know, and that fastball is coming towards home plate, and there is the reek of kerosene.
You know that I'm a sucker for a baseball metaphor. See?
Oh, I tried to throw it in there.
This
if you
radio
know what
show
I mean,
has won
it.
My heart.
Oh.
My non-existent heart.
I just want to do the next verse, too, if you don't mind.
I ordered
a cup of coffee today, then immediately threw it off a cliff right into the North Atlantic. Perfect.
I like to picture our postcard writer just losing his shit. Yeah.
Without tasting or paying for it. Yeah. What are they, the Icelandic people, or they don't, you know, what am I going to do? That guy didn't pay for his coffee.
I know, exactly. And they'd be like, well, I guess it's just another bizarre tourist on our small and humble island.
Who is shouting out, I, the king of this goddamn island.
Yeah.
I screamed foolishly as Wolffish and Pollock, two of the great fishes of Iceland, felt, of course, it's not shark meat that's been in the backyard for a couple of years.
That's true.
Felt the pH shift in the water. Don't forget, folks, the coffee was put into the ocean, right? So the pH shifted out there. If you don't believe me, just listen to Ava HD, right?
That's right, science.
And gnashed their snaggled teeth at me. Okay, so I like this, you know, the assonance of the NG. The only thing is that the first NG that you assonate with, I love talking like this.
Yeah, I can see that. And, you're a scholar.
No, I'm just love the details of your details.
That's so cool.
Gnash and snaggle are only, you know, rhyme. They only have, they chime, as they say in Welsh poetry. They chime, but you're using a silent G.
That would have been a great follow-up band to CSNY, Nash and Snaggle. Can you imagine?
That would be great. Who would they add? If, you know,
Probably you.
Crosby and Stills, and then they add Nash, and then they add Young.
Right.
And who's next in line?
Then they get rid of those three guys, and it's just Nash and Snaggle. Straight up.
Nash and Snaggle.
I like that sound. They could be like a country, kind of dirty country band. Yeah, there's nodding. I see some nodding.
Yeah, there's a lot of nodding going on. There's people and smiling. Nodding and smiling. Let's see. I think I'm going to, you know, I know that you've got in the book Doris Day, the Rolling Stones, the Ramones, the Allman Brothers.
Oh.
One of the great lines in The Natural Hustle, I think of Eric and how much he loved the Allman Brothers, like he loved each brother individually.
It's so true. That is true.
You know,
why do you think that's a good line?
Well,
that's
because
so
the way you wrangle the word brother, you know, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, it sort of is both love and hilarity.
Oh, good.
You know, to me. You know, it's, people would say he loved the Allman Brothers Band. He loved each one individually. But no, he didn't love each one.
Oh, yeah, okay, I see what you mean. That's true. Yeah, he did love them more intimately.
Yeah, he loved each brother individually. I mean, it gets right down. I mean, Butch Trucks was not a brother. You know, just
I know.
Greg and Dwayne.
I know, and that's my little joke. That's nice. You get my little jokes to myself.
Well, you do. You know, but it's not. It's like every line. You know.
Look at you interfering in my private life.
I'm sorry. You know, how long does it take? Did it take you to write this poem?
With that one, the
letter. The postcard. Yeah.
Postcard.
You sort of write off as a postcard.
Yeah. You know what I was inspired by as a friend of mine went to Iceland, as people do, except for me. I'm the last person who has not been to Iceland, apparently. But he went there and then he was like, oh, I think my one friend thinks that I'm going to send him a postcard, but I don't want to write a postcard. But I was like, I would write. I got you. I'll write a postcard from Iceland. And then I just kind of ran away with it, and it was fictional, you know. But that was why I wrote that.
How about the title poem, Natural Hustle? How long did it take to write? Is it written the same
like
way?
You're imagining I'm sitting there with a stopwatch.
Well, I mean,
I could
I'm just
be.
Interested if it's written over a period of days
to?
Or.
I found something I wrote when I was younger than I am now, and I forgot. I used to, until my friend Meredith pointed out, like she made fun of me for, as she put it, time stamping my grocery list. I used to like my to-do list. They always have like, you know, the time and date on them. And she was like, you don't need to put the time and date on your grocery list. So then I felt bashful, so I stopped. But I found something I wrote when I was like 20, and it had the beginning time and the ending time, which was really, but it was like 7 minutes or something like that. But I always did like writing the time on things, except for that I tried to train myself out of it because I thought, you know, it's too much. So unfortunately, I didn't time any of these. But let me look at the title poem so I know what you're talking about. Oh, this one.
Yeah, the first
it's
poem.
It's kind of long.
Yeah, it's really long. I mean, if you sat down and wrote that, that's going to, you know.
You know what? No, because this is the kind of one that is like interrupted and then I go back, you know. Like I'm like walking down the street and I wrote a part of it and then this and that and I'm staying in some apartment, and I wrote some more, and then, yeah. So this should, I think I just kept adding to. So I don't know if the time would be cumulative.
No, yeah, I mean it's
like in a basketball game,
no,
or
it's
overall,
not
like in a
it's
football
overall,
game.
It's overall.
You know?
It's overall. You know, like I wrote. You know, it took me 2 years to write this one, Bob.
Oh, no. Can you imagine? No.
Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, you just keep adding. And, of course, you keep changing. You know, you haven't...
I don't think I would be so frustrated. The thing I like about poetry is that it's fast. You know, you can write it at work or whatever. If it was taking me 2 years, I'd be angry. But I'm not a real poet. You know, like I think a good poet could like sit down and be like, I'm going to work on this for 2 years. It's going to be so good. But I think I would only write a poem if I could get it over with, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just that you do write. Sometimes you write longer poems, really. It seems like they do get
maybe
interrupted.
They're too long.
Nope, they should be longer.
That's what she said.
John Lennon, Stevie Wonder, Traffic. Oh,
yeah. Traffic.
Traffic.
Traffic's favorite son.
Yeah. Let's see, John Lennon's line, the ghost of Buddy Holly's glasses appears in
That's
your book.
Right. Oh, you're wearing the ghost of Buddy Holly's glasses.
Thank you. Yeah. What was the John Lennon? He was downtown.
Oh, he was busy dying.
Meanwhile, downtown.
Oh, that's right, and that's a Queen reference, right? Another One Bites the Dust played in the bodega all winter long, and meanwhile.
Downtown,
yeah.
John Lennon. Was dying.
Which is so sad. The bodega didn't know.
You let it run itself out, and then you just pull it back in. It's a rhythm. It's the waves, you know.
Dave Clark 5 and Stevie Wonder. Oh, you said Stevie Wonder. That's right.
I didn't know if they said Dave Clark 5, but yeah.
I think because it's glad all over.
Glad all over.
I like five fingers on a glad hand.
Yeah. You say, my favorite songs are Dry Leaves Gone Green.
Oh, yeah, that's a sneaky song. See, there are sneaky song references in there. Take a Load for Free. That's a song reference for you.
Then the next line is, my favorite part of photosynthesis is the guitar solo.
Which is very true.
Is that also on the band's...
No, that's an abstraction of my own. But right. You know what? I think it... I do like a beautiful guitar solo. I mean, who the hell doesn't, right? Especially if it's like, you know, like real fingers, like Mark Knopfler.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you could hear his alien frog fingers on the strings.
Kind of. Absolutely, absolutely. Wow, okay, I'm coming back here. Right now I'm coming back. And so we're talking about the music. Oh, and this was funny. When you brought in Bruce Springsteen, and then you referenced Joe Grushecki. Now that's really... Now see what I mean about the detail of the detail?
Oh, no.
So how did you get hooked into Joe Grushecki?
Because all men who obsessively idolize Bruce Springsteen are going to end up at Joe Grushecki at some point. And I'm an amateur in all men, so.
I think you're beyond professional of all men. Amen, the Allman Brothers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, Joe Grushecki. And you know what? That radio, I was, you know, your friend Danny Schott, I believe. Mm-hmm. You guys are pals.
Indeed.
He was driving this car and he was listening to them. And I was like, you know, they're playing all these. And I was like, what is up with this radio station? He was like, oh, yeah, they play Lester Springsteen's all the time. And then I asked him, I was like, so does that mean they play Joe Grushecki? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Lester Springsteen.
You know, like Southside Johnny or like whatever. I Don't Want to Go Home, the classic manthem.
Last great guitar solo I heard was about 4 days ago when this band that's on my T-shirt, Pere Ubu, was playing at Poisson Rouge. David Thomas was doing a hero workout up there. But Wayne Kramer was his guitarist from the MC5. And he just let loose. It was, we don't hear guitar solos now like we heard them back in the day.
Do we not? Well, see, I wasn't back in the day.
You weren't, so but you must have, you picked up on back in the day.
Sure, there's a record of it.
Yeah, there's a record of it all.
That's nice. But, you know, there are also, I know some pretty good guitarists back in Toronto. They like.
Go give them a shout out. This is your podcast.
Well, like Champagne, James Robertson, or David Baxter. Those are two very good Toronto guitarists. And you can just go see them. You know, they're usually around.
Toronto. Something. Do you miss it?
Do I miss Toronto? Yeah. I miss the Toronto that no longer exists, but that's all right. It was ephemeral.
You seem to be pretty much a New Yorker.
I do?
Yeah.
Well, New York's just a city, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I know that maybe the American exceptionalism that like has rubbed off on New York is sometimes people here think it's like it's the city or something, you know, like, you know, or it's a really big city. Like, there's no city as big as that. Like, look at India. It's like stuffed with big cities. Or China. Like, I mean, not only those two places. There are cities all over the world, clearly. You don't need me to tell you that, but they do.
No,
there's a through line, you know, that, yeah. Like, cities have certain things in common and they have other things less in common, but yes, New York's a lovely place, but the world is full of them.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like you live in them like one at a time, but it also seems to me like I'd call you a New Yorker by now.
All right. Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
People used to say that to me sometimes when I had never been to New York. They sometimes thought that I was from there, but people often think I'm from somewhere else. And I am.
Which you are, yes. Let us agree on that one. Are you ready for another poem? Cherry Red.
Oh, the Cherry Red Roadster. Yeah. Why do you like that one? Danny likes that one, too. You guys in cahoots? You like got a racket going on?
Yeah. No, if you really want to know, it's because I think there's some parallelism going on with the postcard in the Cherry Red Roadster.
Really? Mm-hmm. Tell me. Or is it a secret?
We got to hear the poem for it to work, right? I mean,
okay.
I'm already giving it all away to you.
Oh, all right.
What page?
It's like early on, right? Oh, no, it's not.
No, it's 82.
I don't know. Well, there's another Savannah poem that's really
long. This is Savannah. I would really like to, you know, if you wanted to talk about Savannah, because she's such a presence.
You would love her.
Oh.
It's true. You would. I can tell. And she'd be like, oh, Bob, shut up.
That's what I love.
I know. I kind of thought so. This one's called A Cherry Red MG Roadster on Palmerston Square, July 2020. In the weeks after Savannah died, I would see things in their new, unholy light, stripped, as you do. Here's one, Palmerston Square, in the magic excrescence of the snow globe of glow that remains of a sunless July evening. I take the alley shortcut, its mercenary efficiency carving through the flanks of prim brick, northwest toward Bathurst. All the old nameless alleyways have signposts now, like department stores. As with affairs being named, they end soon after. In the weeks after someone dies, you think about them all the time in the act of not thinking about them. I'm not going to think about it, I think, sharply intaking the filigree light, a scalpel. It isn't true, I think, clocking the cherry red MG, casually resplendent in the drive. I'm not thinking about her. Young girl practicing flute in the window, her then-ness or her not-ness. Jangle of hoops, tattoos, and dotted cotton, a shed snakeskin, her summer dress unmoored. The young girl mouths her flute, the notes wet the evening air. Down the street, The knife sharpener's bell warbles, nearing.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. You know, it's an elegy for a dear friend. But to have an elegy titled A Cherry Red MG Roadster on Palmerston Square, July 2020, is also bringing that friend to life. You know, an image that is so full of crazy life that you get a feeling for Savannah, the living being.
Oh, good.
Just I'm from glad. The title, you know.
Well, that makes me happy because I feel like she'd be like, what are you doing?
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good friend to have.
But you know what? If she was happy and thought it was lively, then that pleases me.
I'm not saying that I am she, but I could be she. You know, I'm not used with my. We're talking to Ava HD, and we're reading from The Natural Hustle, her new book here, and that's an extraordinary poem. One thing I like is the way after you start off the way you're seeing things, the unholy light, you say, here's one, which takes me out of this text and into what your gift is to the reader, how your interrelationship with the reader or the listener. You know, here's one. Who are you talking to? You're talking to me. You're talking to the person who's reading this. You know?
That's very crafty.
I know you rebel against the craft, but I can't help.
I don't.
You don't. Okay.
You're
now we got that
me.
Settled.
I'm just so impressed. What else are you going to find?
Well, how about the way that the old nameless alleyways have signposts now?
And they do, especially. I know here they kind of do it too, you know, when they're like doing their city revitalizations, which are so beautiful, but unfortunately also seem to be irrevocably accompanied by rising rents. You know, it's like, so people will want to live here, we'll rename all the streets something cute, and then, you know, whatever. I know this is a problem that fucks with New York as well, but yeah, in Toronto they started, I don't know, just like a couple of years back, naming all the back alleys, which is kind of nice. You know, there's one called, you wonder about the story, there's like Jewish Choir Lane or something, or Jewish Family Choir Lane, something like that. There's one for like Bill Cameron. They're just like different people, but it is a little weird because there's these little back routes, you know, like where teenagers would get drunk or someone could shoot up, and then all of a sudden it's like, welcomed, you know?
I know. It's like the naming of something, making it official, takes it out of its reality and makes it a commodity.
It does, and it seems like almost perhaps those alleys are safer to walk now. I couldn't say, but they seem like maybe they're less safe to hang out in if
there ain't no spice.
Yeah, maybe. You know, like there's something about alleyways. I mean, they could be dangerous places, but they can also be a refuge for people who are short on that.
Well said, yeah. But then you make the leap to, as with affairs, being named, they end soon after.
I'm just elbowing the alleyways.
Oh, that's a great elbow jab there. You just, you know, you can't resist pumping it out into the, into the world.
It's true.
But and then you go into your thinking phase. I'm not going to think about it. I think, sharply intaking the filigree light. A scalpel. It isn't true, I think, clocking the cherry red MG, casually resplendent in the drive. I'm not thinking about her. That's an impassable line.
Well, isn't that what that's like what the philosophers call the dialectic, right?
Mm.
There's IOU 10 cents now.
Really? I must owe you a fortune now. Modality, 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 modality.
I feel like we all know that thing, that you think about the thing, you're not thinking about the thing. And when you say you're not thinking about it, then you think about it.
This is where we get the craftiness back. You know, you just, you don't mind, you don't mind risking it. You know, you'll go, you'll think about thinking about, you know, you will not think, I am not thinking about her now.
Yeah, that's a funny thing to say. But you know, it's like that desperate urge to carve out this, you know. It's like saying, I'm not worried, you know.
No worries.
No worries. There's a game, actually. When I was crewing on tall ships, the kids used to play a game. I don't know whence it originated, but it was, I think it was just called The Game, maybe? I don't know. Maybe it didn't have a name. But the only aim of this thing was to not be playing the game, to not think that you were playing the game. So as soon as you remember it, you have to say, I lost. You just go about your day, you're working on the ship, you're doing this, you're doing that, whatever, and then, you know, you're not thinking about it, whatever. But if it pops into your head, you have to inform everyone around you that you lost.
And at that point, everybody is thinking about the game.
Yeah.
And then you have to go back into the game. But maybe you can win if you can stop thinking about the game.
Yeah.
Sounds like a poem to me.
I guess so.
And then you come back to the poem.
It's like a koan or whatever, however you say that.
Yeah, a Zen Cohen.
Yeah. Not a Len Cohen.
No, it's just a nice Jewish boy.
Yeah.
A little Lenny Cohen.
Little Lenny Cohen.
Listen to this one. Jangle of hoops, tattoos, and dotted cotton. A shed snakeskin. Her summer dress unmoored.
Right.
Now, again, to me, there's like, where is she going? She's definitely, there's a sense in me that wants to say, these are random. She's allowing the hard drive of her mind just to go kawowzel with all of its, you know, any place it wants to land on, we're going to put those words in here. On the other hand, a shed snakeskin to me sort of also reminds me of a reek of kerosene. That's why I was thinking, is he going to bring up a parallel like he said he would? And here it is, you know. I just, you know, this moment of drama where an image, in this case, a visual one. Oh, wow.
See, all those things are in there, right? Tattoos and dotted cotton.
I'm looking at a photograph that has an Italian month's name at it.
And oh, that's just my phone.
Oh, your phone is Italian. Interesting.
My phone's Italian.
Great. And it's a beautiful woman who could be Italian with a red tattoo on her left arm and a blue tattoo on her left shoulder, because you can see it because her white dress with red polka dots allows you to see it.
You see, she's got those big jangly earrings.
Big jangly earrings. That's it. Look
there
at that.
There she is.
Hoops, tattoos, and dotted cotton.
See, it's journalistic
integrity. It's all true. It's all just a documentary.
I told you I admire documentaries.
What is she kissing?
She's kissing like a robot art piece.
It's a robot art piece. A robot art piece. Yeah. Very.
My friend Dasham took that picture, so I didn't see the robot myself.
I would say that kiss she's laying on the robot, who doesn't seem to be quite grokking it, is quite light and sensuous.
Yeah, it's enviable.
An enviable one. Her summer dress unmoored. This could also be the same picture.
Well, yeah, I think the idea maybe there was that if a woman dies, then all these accessories, including her own pigmented skin and her dress and her earrings, they're unmoored, right?
Because I noticed that you do have a summer dress or a dress unmoored is one of the images that you come back to through this
book.
That's
true.
You know, and another thing about, you know, reading the whole book, which I am again suggesting that you do, The Natural Hustle by Ava HD, that there are certain words, I mean, words that create themes that spike through the book.
That's such a nice way of saying that I'm harping on about the same old things. I like that.
I wouldn't
say... You can stay.
Okay. All right. I won't... But really, you know, I mean, they're not easy words to repeat either, Ava.
Really? Well, what are they?
Snow globe.
Really?
Snow globe. You know, you're not supposed to use snow globe in your poems. Don't you know that?
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay.
My friend Dennis used to use that word.
Well... Well, I guess we could blame him.
Blame Dennis Fry.
How about rain?
Rain. Well, it occurs a lot. I guess it's not my fault that it rains. Rain. The rain, it raineth every day. Hey ho, the wind and the rain.
It does seem that that climate change is present in all of your poems.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just a sucker for the weather. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a simple guy. I'm like, woo, give me a sandwich, give me the weather. I will only talk about my sandwich and the weather.
But boy, where you go with that sandwich and that weather, huh? We got 4 pages, folks, and it's just a sandwich and the weather. Nothing to be done. How about Jackals and Fireflies? How long did it take you to write that, do you think?
Oh, yeah, you know, I always confuse that with The Natural Hustle, that poem, because they're kind of the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Like walking around New York, eavesdropping on people, writing it down. And that's, I guess that's the difference between a poem I wrote, like, at work, when I only had a certain amount of space, you know, the back of a piece of paper, coaster or something.
What was work?
Bartending. Mm. So, you know, you got a receipt. It's like, you could see some of these... more the size of a receipt. But that one is more like I'm at liberty in New York City, you know, not working, rambling around, eavesdropping, unintentionally. But people keep saying things, you know, and they're so delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, I think, yeah, that was another one that was, you know, interrupted.
Right, that's what it's, you know, I think, you know, this is a great direction. I love this direction. You know, it's...
Charlie was the direction.
Okay, so let's talk about Charlie.
He was responsible for the direction.
So did you write this from visuals, or did the poem come first, or how did that work out?
The poem came first. Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be a film. Maybe that's clear. I don't know. I wrote it... in 2019, I was visiting New York, and I wrote it, wandering around, looking for hats, nachos, and then the pandemic came upon us, and then my friend Brian Kabayakawa, who's another great Toronto musician. He's a bassist and he's also a composer. We were talking about how it could be fun to put a poem to music. And then I had sent this one to him because I was like, this one could be fun. And then he had said on one of his visits to New York, he had taken like ambient street noise or whatever, little clips of it and composed bits and pieces. So we were going to do that. And then, during the lockdown, when people like touring musicians suddenly had time on their hands for the first time in their adult lives, you know, we're like, that's a good moment to compose something. So he did compose music. I made a recording and he added music to it. And then I sent that to Charlie because I was like, hey, this is cool. And then he said that it would make a good short film. And then eventually it was a short film.
So the Charlie we're talking about is Charlie Kaufman, and who you must have met a while before because you're incredible, wonderful, earth-shaking. Where are my adjectives coming from? No, someplace.
Strip club.
Yes.
The incredible, wonderful, earth-shaking.
Bone dog.
Amber. Oh, bone dog.
you know, which appears in Charlie's film, I'm thinking of Ending Things, spoken by Jessie Buckley.
She's so great. Yeah.
She gave you a nice blurb, you know.
Oh, she did. Yes, yeah. That's right.
She is such an incredible actor.
She's a fantastic actress. She mentioned radishes in the blurb, but they didn't print the part about radishes.
Well, I talk with those people.
I said,
where are the radishes?
Give me the radishes. Okay. So, yeah.
She was so great in Women Talking.
I haven't seen her yet.
Oh, you gotta. You know, but everything she's
watching
in.
Films.
Yeah, what's
yeah,
up
there? She's brilliant.
Oh,
she really is.
Wonderful. That what was that? Wild Rose, was that the
yes.
one she started?
And
in?
She sang in it.
Oh
with
my
her own
goodness!
Voice.
You see, I can't believe it's the same person.
And you know what? She's got a record with another man whose name escapes me, and I haven't bought the record yet, but I'm going. But she has a whole album of songs.
Well, I didn't know that. I'm going to hear it. I'm going to go right onto some server or other and find it.
Attaboy.
But she gives such an out. All of a sudden, when there are, well, not all of a sudden, as a matter of fact, there's nothing all of a sudden except the parents in I'm thinking of Indie Things, who all of a sudden are complete comic strip. Anyway, they change every move.
Just like all parents.
Exactly. Just like all people, but parents especially. But she's sitting there with the guy that reminds me of...
Well, parents are people with, like, a permanent in-house critique, you know, so they're...
They keep changing that. Yeah, outsized yeah. and with long tongues and with toupees that, you know, go up to the ceiling. Not to mention the candelabras that they're wearing on their fingertips.
Oh, so, wow. Look at you go. I hope someone's going to write this down. At least we're recording.
She's sitting there in the front seat. It's a truck, isn't it? Or is it a car? And it's snowing. And all of a sudden, here's my all of a sudden again, damn
all
it.
All of a sudden.
We're hearing this long monologue, which slowly begins to unfurl in your mind to say something like, maybe this is a poem.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, and maybe it's not a poem. Who knows? Because it's never been accepted for publication anywhere. So,
isn't it in this book?
Well, it is in this book. Sorry,
okay.
So it's
okay.
in this book,
right.
Which came after the film. But I mean, and then you know, like you submit your poem. Sometimes you're like, oh, maybe I'm gonna do it, but nobody wanted that one. But it's okay because the film wanted that one.
It's a brilliant poem.
And I'm glad
if
you liked
anybody
it.
Who's watched the film knows how it holds its place. Through this interminable ride to what's the guy's name? I forget.
Jake.
Through to Jake's parents' house. It's interminable drive, and this poem holds its place throughout the interminability. You know, it's allowed to live just as these words. I don't know. I'm so interested in how films eat up poetry when they rarely connect, you know. So you know, we could talk about that. But
there's one in this one film. What is it? A Chilean film called Gloria.
Mm.
There is a Claudio Bertoni poem that's really beautiful that this guy recites.
I haven't seen Gloria. Now I'm going to see it.
Well, you don't have to see it. You could just watch the part with the poem.
Okay, well, I'll see how how time goes. You know, if I got time.
Who knows where the time goes?
It's all that gets shoveled. It gets shoveled up and put in, deposited in the Albuquerque Greyhound bus station. I know where time goes.
Yeah. Well, now I do too.
Yeah, exactly. You pass it on. So Charlie says, let's make a movie out of what was your voice and the bassist's soundscape that went along with the reading.
Which was then changed then
uh-huh.
because it was a cool it's a really I don't know highly textured soundscape, but that's different than what I guess a film soundtrack requires. I don't know what it is because I'm not a composer, but perhaps a lighter touch. You know, you
mm-hmm.
don't you
sure.
do the same. So Brian composed a fresh,
wow,
fresh scape for us, and then Chase Irvin and Jack Martinez was the second camera, and Chase was the DP on the film, took some pretty fantastic, heartfelt footage of the city, which I thought was really beautiful. You know, like they loved. I like the idea that someone's looking at the people on the subway and at the rats and everyone else with
and at Virginia.
Love. And at Virginia. Gosh, she has a beautiful face, doesn't she?
Oh, gosh, that's a great moment. And I'm not a big guy for the one-to-one approach, you know. Oh, I'm talking to Virginia, and then who's the waitress, and then there she is in a poetry film. But in this case, the cinematography is just so lovely. And if you don't believe me, just ask Ram Devanini, who is
the
most...
He just gave us the thumbs up.
I know. He's the most impossible guy to get approval from. But he really loved the film, too. So, you know, I hope people will... It's free for viewing now.
It's free for viewing, YouTube. Yeah. You can watch it on the YouTube.
That's called Jackals and Fireflies. Did you write that down? Or did you text yourself?
Jackals and fireflies. And it contains both.
Jackals, I remember you say, what's the difference between a jackal and a hyena? I don't remember. What were the fireflies? I don't remember.
The fireflies are in Tribeca Park, which is just, you know, one of those little sort of isosceles shaped, you know, almost not a park.
What do you think about the mix of media? Poetry leaping into the digital age.
Are we in the digital age? Or?
We are on the cusp.
Oh,
right now.
Cusp.
You see, when we switched from orality to writing, it took over 2,000 years to move from chirography to the printing press that had mass distribution. Mm. But with the digital, the evolution is a little bit shorter. Like 50 years later, everybody has a cell phone. No wonder people are sitting around a table texting to each other.
But they're also using their mobile phones to listen to podcasts, which brings you back to your oral fixation. And that's why people, when you try to pass them in the street, they can't hear you because they're all like listening to their podcast.
Yeah.
You know, or they're having a conversation. They're like, I told you, I don't want onions and a dinner. And then you're like, really?
Yeah, there's, having been spent so many years at the extreme of literacy, you know, where that was it, when poetry was just really, you know, owned by the page and was just, you know, pushing it in every direction.
The satchel page.
Satchel, another baseball reference.
Another poet.
Oh, yeah. What was it?
I think every strike is a poem, right?
Yeah. Like, and every ball is a...
Every ball is a haiku.
Okay. Every strike is a poem. Every ball is a haiku. Was it Satchel Paige who said 90% of everything is showing up?
I think. No.
No, it wasn't him.
No way. I hope not.
What did he say?
What did he say?
Yeah,
I think
something.
He did it with his body. Poet. But
that's,
you know,
right.
What? Maybe he said some things that I don't know about.
No.
I feel like he...
There's something. Hey, Siri.
No, none of that. None of that. But aren't all these little things a poem? You know, you see... Sometimes you see a really nice collection of items on the street, you know, like a little piece of paper that was run over and... bird and some shit and like a dropped child's toy.
There you go again.
Well, I didn't do it. The street just served it up. It's all a poem, right?
That's right. Yeah.
It's like
that's marvelous. Do you want to read a poem to conclude this thing? Do you think we're at that point?
Thing? Sure. Like all instead right. of playing the last post. On my bugle.
You could play taps on your bugle if you wanna. Why don't? Okay.
No, wait! I can't. You call my bluff.
Don't worry, Ram is just gonna drop it in there. He's gonna do all that post. You know, so it's no worries, no worries.
Right. The digital age lies.
I don't know. Is is the natural. Oh, you could read If All Your Friends Jumped Off a Cliff.
That is a very short poem.
How's it go?
Well, the title is If All Your Friends Jumped Off a Cliff, and the poem is Yes. Because of course.
Because of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes is the answer to that, yeah. I'm Bob Holman, and thank you for listening to Poetry is Bread. Subscribe to our podcast to get notifications of new episodes. Check us out at BoweryPoetry.com. The podcast is co-produced by Ram Devanini and Flavia Rocha with Retiplex. Artwork by Fabian Ceruleo. This podcast series is funded by National Endowment for the Arts and New York State Council on the Arts, the Governor of New York State, and the New York State Legislature. Thank you all. Thank you all for listening. Poetry, it goes in one ear and stays there.